to this edition, the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, if you're following along on YouTube, this might be the greatest dichotomy of two backdrops we've ever had in podcast history. I'm reporting live from the dressing room at the NBC Sports Studio in Stamford, Connecticut, where, yes, yet another snowstorm is underway. While Rex, you are in Palm Beach, overlooking the practice putting green, sunglasses on, looking no less than 82 years old. How are things at PGA National and your fun in the sun?
I wanted to have a little fun with this yesterday when I joined you and our friend Burko on Golf Today. I wanted to put the sunglasses on and point out that I know you guys have had some chilly mornings up in Connecticut. I'm sure it's been a little uncomfortable. I get it. But when I got to the golf course yesterday, and I'm just going to scan a little bit. I'll go back to the... But when I got to the golf course yesterday, when I walked by that lake that you see right there for the YouTube audience in the background, there was steam coming off that lake. Its temperatures were in the mid-40s. Luckily, yesterday it got up into the mid-60s. Today it's into the mid-70s. It's getting better, but it's a struggle, man. I'm not going to lie to you. It is. The struggle is real.
So I am nothing if not neurotic. I have some significant OCD tendencies when it comes to work performance. We were supposed to have a noon show on Monday. And if you've been following anything about what's been happening in the Northeast, it was like a historic blizzard that hit overnight Sunday and into Monday. So thinking, yes, obviously we're going to be having the show at noon. I went into the office at 7 a.m., got a black car. It was great. I was all ready to go. Noticed there was absolutely no one in the office. 30 minutes later, yes, all of the studio shows are canceled for the day. It was just me, an idiot, a moron who was in there waiting to go. But yes, I was braving the elements. It was nasty. It was a foot and a half of snow. It's essentially, if you've never been in a blizzard, and I grew up in Western New York, so I was familiar with them. It's essentially like a Cat 1 with snow. Like it's blowing 50 or 60 miles an hour. And instead of torrential rains and flooding rains, you just have a ton of snow. And that's exactly what we had. It was miserable. Fingers crossed that my flight can actually take off today. What's the happening, Rex, at the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches? Do you not have any top 25 players? Does that mean the vibe has been reduced? Or do you view this optimistically? Is this an opportunity to crown another young star on the PGA Tour?
Did I sound optimistic when we just talked about this on Golf Today during my hit?
Quote,
not
good is how you phrased
not
the field.
Good. Maybe not great would have been a better way of saying it. I can workshop it. I'm going to do the same hit on tonight's show. So maybe I workshop that a little bit. But you pointed, there's one player out of the top 30 in the world. There was a rash of WDs on Monday. It included last week's winner, which I think everyone, it's Jacob Bridgman, which is perfectly understandable. Ben Griffin withdrew, Adam Scott withdrew. So the field took a late hit. Before I move on from that, though, the best part of the week so far is, and I'm not even exaggerating this, I walked into the locker room yesterday morning and Billy Horschel was in there, your friend, my friend, Billy Horschel. And I told him about your plight and the idea that you were stuck in the office by yourself. And neither one of us could stop laughing. I mean, it was maniacal to the point that people walked into the locker room to see if we were all right. Because the problem here, and I don't want to skip past this, you are neurotic. And the meeting for that noon show is not till 9:30. I appreciate your work ethic. No one respects it more than me. But 7 a.m. seems ridiculously early, especially in the middle of a blizzard. I tried to tell you, give it a beat, bro. Stay in the hotel room for an extra 30 minutes. Let's see how this is going to play out. But no, you had to forge ahead.
That's just me time. It's the same reason why I wake up at 5 a.m. every morning to get in my 4-mile walk, because that is a special time where it's just me and my thoughts. I can collect myself. I can have some free food. I can have some free coffee. I love that time. It just so happened to backfire this time around. Yes, I did get a text from Billy Horschel. Always great to hear from our fans.
I will say, yes, the field's not great this week. I'm going to put it in this context. You're absolutely right. It's another opportunity for the world to get introduced to a Jacob Bridgman. I did think it was funny. There was a bunch of headlines on golf-related websites last week of who is Jacob Bridgman and here's Jacob Bridgman and everything you need to know about Jacob Bridgman and all of the different variations of that. And I do think that's good for the product. We talk about meritocracy being such an important part of the PGA Tour, and we're going to see it this week. All that being said, we're in a very difficult landscape right now. If you're a tournament director on the PGA Tour and you're looking yourself in the mirror and you're thinking to yourself, whatever the new model looks like, it's going to be less is more. I think we've all come to that understanding. And if you're the tournament director who's the fine fellow here at the Cognizant Classic, but you're probably one of those that's looking yourself in the mirror and thinking to yourself, am I going to be a casualty of less is more? It shouldn't be that way. In their defense, the PGA Tour has put this event in an absolutely awful place on the schedule. It's wedged between two player-hosted signature events with away and Pebble Beach 2 weeks on the back end. Like you have four big events in a 5 week stretch, and oh, Cognizant is put in the middle. So it's completely unfair. And you're right. This is an opportunity for someone else. I mean, there's plenty of names we can talk about that I'd love to see have a great week this week at PGA National, but it certainly is not the field. My guess is what CEO Brian Roelof wants to see at a PGA Tour event.
Yeah. I'm still looking forward to it because you do have players like Jacob Bridgman, where they can alter the trajectory of the career. And that's sort of the beauty of the PGA mm-hmm. Tour, where if you get to this status, you can now alter it in ways by performance. So that could be a Ryan Gerard. That could be a Hogarth twins. That could be Michael Thor-Bjornsson, all of whom are in the field this week. A Johnny Kiefer, who was the Korn Ferry Tour number one player last year. Like, these are all great opportunities for those players, again, without going up against a top 25 player. You mentioned sort of the log jam in the schedule. We have three signature events plus the players in a five-week span. And of course, it's pretty unreasonable, except for Shane Lowry, who's doing five in a row, to ask a Rory, a Scotty to do that sort of thing. But it's an interesting dynamic, Rex, because the PGA Tour owns and operates the Cognizant Classic. They are motivated to boost the stature of this tournament. To me, it is a no-brainer whenever the PGA Tour remakes this schedule. And let's say they kick it off with Phoenix, which is sort of the rumor that you're going to have in mid-February. Why would you not make this number two or number three on the PGA Tour schedule if you're blowing up the idea of a West Coast swing? I know you think it's a little bit chilly. I know you're wearing three layers right now. That's a great opportunity, though, for players who have been deprived of playing opportunities for 4 or 5 months to kickstart it at a Doral, kickstart it at a PGA National. You have a bevy of stars who live locally, just simply bumping it up in the schedule ahead of what could potentially be a West Coast swing, I think is the move here. And all of a sudden, we're not talking about zero top 25 players. We're talking about this event redeveloping its stature that we saw in the early 2010s.
It is chilly. I have on two layers. I will also point out that the sun is very bright. I'm worried about not having enough sunscreen on. And all right, I'm done being mean. I know it's been difficult in the Northeast. I'm finished being mean. I apologize for that. I'm going to come at that on two fronts. One, I had a chance to talk to Camila Villegas, who's a member of the PGA Tour Policy Board, yesterday morning. And there was a Future Competitions Committee meeting yesterday right after I spoke with him. And it was in context to this event. This is Camilo's 20th start here. He's a former champion here. Like, this is where he lives. This event is important to him. And I kind of set the question up, just like you and I were just bouncing back and forth. What is the future of the Cognizant Classic? And he sort of gave me a wry smile. And if only your producer, Arthur Volpe, would have let you run that sound on the show yesterday morning, you would have heard it, because his response was, I think we're going to be okay. And he's talking specifically about this event. And it goes to what you just said. There are so many local PGA Tour members who call this area home now, that if you wanted to really make it easy on your members, on these top players, you would put an event here. Now, the other side of this conversation is what we've heard. Major markets is one of the biggest themes when it comes to whatever the new schedule looks like. And if Doral is going to be a permanent fixture again on the PGA Tour, which there's no reason to think it wouldn't be, Miami would get the nod, over Palm Beach. It's just, I love it here. It's warm. It's beautiful. The palm trees are out. The sunshine is out. But it's not a major market, certainly not compared to Miami. So you just start picking off reasons. And again, this is, I think, the way you put it, nitpicking. But you start picking off reasons of, if we have 38 events now on the PGA Tour schedule and they want to go to 25, you need to start coming up with reasons to shed X number of events off the PGA Tour schedule. And this is a reason to shed this event, because you've already got an event in the South Florida's most biggest market. That would be Miami and Doral. Do you need another one here? I don't know the answer is yes on that.
So my counter to your counter would be that you have to play somewhere.
How long are we going to do this?
It's supposed to be a 25-minute show, just full of rebuttals and counters. I would say, Rex, like, in February, there's only so many places you can play. You can't play in Texas. You can play in Arizona, obviously. Phoenix is not going anywhere, understandably. I worry about the California desert. You're talking about not big markets. That would seem to be one of them. Riviera, if that's going to be shifted later on in the year, potentially as part of the FedEx Cup playoffs. I know there's been talk about Pebble and moving that to the summer. The summer doesn't necessarily mean the playoffs. I understand there's a big car show in the Monterey area that would be prohibitive to potentially making it part of the FedEx Cup playoffs. But why not in June or July? I still think it makes a lot of sense for Pebble Beach. And so when you just sort of look at the landscape, Rex, like there's only so many places you can play in mid to late February when the PGA Tour season would start. So yeah, go to Phoenix, go to Doral. Why not go to Palm Beach? It might not be the biggest market, but it is a golf mad market with a bunch of great courses. It's always a well-attended event when the field is good where you are at PGA National. And it's still going to be, I think, ripe playing conditions with the convenience factor of having so many players close by.
I understand where you're coming from. I guess the counter to my counter to your counter is going to be, then you start giving me the events that aren't going to be. Give me the 13 events if that's our starting point. If it's not going to be the Cognizant Classic, you give me the 13 events that you think are not going to be on the PGA Tour schedule. Because all we've done so far this year, you and I both are guilty of this, is we talked about Sony might be on the wrong side of this when we start looking at the schedule going forward. And then they played Sony and you and I both fell in love all over again. And we start coming up with excuses why it needs to be on the schedule. Same thing for Amex. Same thing for every event that's going to be played this year. They're all good events. That's why they're PGA Tour events. They all have a charm to them, whatever it might be. This is because all of the players live local and it's a neat place to be this time of year. But if you want to talk about playing in February, I mean, let's say the starting point is Phoenix, either the week of the Super Bowl, maybe the week after the Super Bowl, week whatever before. The case may be.
I'll say, you say would the think week before.
San Diego is a major market. That seems to be the next logical step. You would go there, and then you would end up coming back east. And maybe this is in the conversation, but certainly Doral is going to be your first option. And after that, you have Bay Hill, which is going to be your second option because that's a player-hosted signature event, and then the Players' Championship. So at this point, we're trying to figure out like which one of the Florida Swing events goes away.
I mean, in that scenario,
you're going to say Valspar, but 3 weeks from now, you're going to be arguing this Valspar needs to stay on the schedule.
I like Valspar. I think Innisbrook is arguably the best course on the Florida Swing, just as a complete examination. I mean, I could go through the schedule and lop off 12. I don't want to do it right now because this is just a mini pod in the midweek, but I think you could do it. I just think from a convenience standpoint, especially depending if the schedule starts the week before the Super Bowl, which would be the bye week between the conference championships and the Super Bowl, it does make sense to have at least two events before you then you get into the signature event model. Doral, go up to Palm Beach, go up to Orlando. All of a sudden, you do have a beefed up Florida Swing. You had an opportunity, Rex, earlier this week to head to TGL, which had not one, but two doubleheaders earlier this week at the SoFi Center. Is the first opportunity I believe you've had to take in some TGL action in 2026. You and I both did the show during the debut episode in 2025. What was your impression of the product a year later?
I'm still impressed with the product. I'm impressed with the vibe. I'm impressed with just the technology that goes into it, all the things we touched on last year. I think if you're going to sit down and be critical about this, and I think you probably should, when you look at the ratings have dropped off this year, whatever that means. Like I don't even know. We should have our friend Josh Carpenter on from Sports Business Journal because he's better at this than I am, because I think most TV executives will tell you that ratings only tell part of the picture, that there's so many other things that factor into these conversations, like what time of day were you playing these matches, what was it up against, who was actually playing in these matches. So I think TGL can take a lot of solace in the idea that the product is still very strong, but there is some hand-wringing about where the ratings are right now. And just the idea is it's not quite as shiny and new maybe as it was last year. I will say, and you and I both were in the arena last year, and the in-game experience is really cool. Still very, very cool. As a matter of fact, my middle son, I think I'm going to bring him down here in a couple of weeks to go see a match, because there's plenty of attendance there. They've created sort of an atmosphere. There's a bar in the arena now. Like everything about it speaks very well of it. What they desperately need, and they're trending in that direction, is Rory's team to play well. You need him in the playoffs. Like if this goes back to putting out your best possible product.
Yeah, I certainly understand that. And obviously there's at least a growing expectation that maybe we could see Tiger Woods in the next week and a half play a match as he's gearing up potentially to play in the Masters as well. I don't like talking about ratings because there's myriad factors that go into it, whether you're on big ESPN, whether you're on ESPN2, the time of day, the schedule not set. It's sort of all over the map. You've had an issue this year, I would say, Rex, with some players who have been subbed out, at least in the early part of the schedule. You look at, I think, like 25% roughly were replacement players. So I think some continuity with the players as well. And so it has not been a perfect run out for what TGL has wanted in 2026. I think the ratings are indicative of that as well. But, you know, people are going to like it. People are going to hate it. Very curious to see what the future of that brand is in 2027.
I will say, being in the arena last night, and I think the few I covered last year, I actually struggled to ask what I thought were intelligent questions that I was actually curious about. I actually had two questions that I wanted to ask last night. I don't know, you probably didn't get a chance to watch the match, but they have a hole called the Stinger where it's very contrived, but you have to hit essentially your tee shot underneath a cliff. And we've all seen, or hopefully you've seen, Matt Fitzpatrick, who somehow has this shot dialed down so much that yesterday the launch angle on his drive was 2.8 degrees. That's it, 2.8 degrees. And when I asked him about it, he corrected me and said, no, normally I can launch that at 0.2 degrees. He goes, that ballooned up on me.
Skied it. Skied it.
Which I know it's real golf nerdy stuff, but to you and I, we're golf nerds. It was kind of a cool conversation. Like, how do you do that with a driver? It's not like he was hitting, trying to hit a knockdown 2-iron from the back of his stance. It creates these cool moments. I will say that.
I will say that as well. Obviously, the technology is one thing. You got gamblers. They're interested in the TGL product as well. So a lot goes into it. A lot of people love it. A lot of people hate it. I don't really know what to think about it at this stage. One player, Rex, who you mentioned played the Stinger, he played earlier this week, was Justin Thomas. He actually had an 18-foot apex when he played the Stinger hole. This was the first time we'd seen Justin Thomas swing a golf club, essentially, since the Ryder Cup has not played a PGA Tour event since Napa and the Pro Core Championship. He has said now, Rex, JT will be coming back to the PGA Tour next week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. We'll play the following week at the Players Championship, reevaluate from there. Wouldn't surprise to see him at the Valspar Championship if his surgically repaired back can hold up a golf course where he has had some success on. I think when you zoom out big picture, what's the significance of a JT return to the tour?
I mean, certainly he's going to have an impact. He's one of those names that moves the needle. And let's face it, you and I have had this conversation before. There's 5, 10, 15, whatever the number you want to put on it. There's only a finite number of players on the PGA Tour that truly move the needle, and he's one of them. You look at what happened on Monday, and you had Tom DeAngelo, who's a longtime golf writer here in Palm Beach County, on the show earlier today. And he was actually at that match on Monday night. And I was kind of asking, did you see anything out of JT that either impressed you or concerned you? And he said he looked rusty. Like, clearly, you know, he didn't quite have his A game.
He's hitting onto a screen 20 yards away.
I'm not saying anything about
his performance. Yeah. Come on.
What I will say, he looked healthy. Like, you certainly looked like there were no limitations in his swing. And given the fact that he's as close to Tiger Woods as he is, my guess is he has peppered him with questions and knows not to come back too early. I'm excited. I think you nailed it when you were asked specifically about what are your expectations this year. I don't have very high expectations over the next month. Let him knock off the rust. But there's no reason in my mind that he can't bounce back by the time we get to the middle of the summer and start making himself known again.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of what happened with Xander Schauffele. It's not a perfect comp because Xander didn't need surgery and it was on his rib as opposed to his back. But remember, Xander played Kapalua, took off about 2.5 months, returned in what is the most difficult stretch of the Florida swing. He played Bay Hill. He played the Players. He played Valspar, just trying to get some reps under his belt before the year's first major at the Masters. Didn't play particularly well, but he was chipping away at it and eventually tied for eighth at the Masters, had another good finish at the Open Championship later in the year. Different procedures, different recoveries. By all accounts, Justin Thomas has taken his time from this micro discectomy. It's the first time he's really had an injury concern. He has no limitations. He has had no setbacks in his recovery. I hope for his sake that he's injury-free and can play pain-free the remainder of 2026, because I think it's worth remembering, JT had a really nice first half of 2025. 7 top 10 finishes. Many of them came in the signature events on the PGA Tour. He won at Harbortown last spring as well. you saw a little bit of a tail off in performance over the summer. Maybe that's swing issues. Maybe that's health concerns. Haven't had an opportunity to ask him exactly what he attributed that to. Would not surprise, though, because you saw a decrease in speed, saw a decrease in distance throughout the summer, potentially attributed to the back. So hopefully JT is healthy, ready to go. We will see him next week in the signature event at Bay Hill next week. One thing, Rex, we did not get to in the Sunday show was something that popped up on the DP World Tour. Specifically, that was John Rahm not being among the eight LIV golfers who received a waiver to play DP World Tour events just in 2026. What'd you make of that development?
It don't have enough information, I guess, is the way I would answer that, because we have no idea what went on behind closed doors. Those eight players are probably the players you would expect, including Tyrrell Hatton. And that's John Rahm's partner when it comes to the Ryder Cup. And that's really what this is about. And the waiver they were given is they were given conditional releases to play in the rest of the live events the rest of this year, which means they don't have to pay fines when they play a live event, because they're not allowed to do that under the tour's regulations. I will give the European Tour credit. They continue to find solutions where the PGA Tour only seems to be interested in problems. So this was a step in the right direction. The fact that John Rahm wasn't one of them, though, is pretty shocking to me. Again, we don't have all the information. But if this boils down to what we have heard from John in the past, where he is drawing a line in the sand out of principle, he doesn't feel like he should owe any fines. He doesn't feel like he should ask anyone for permission. And that's simply not the facts. I think most courts have ruled that as a member organization, the organization can dictate these types of terms, just not just in Europe, but also in the United States. So it seems like a weird hill for John Rahm to go up and die on. If that's the case, we don't know if it is, but if that's the problem here, I don't quite understand, because not only do they want him on that Ryder Cup team next year, I think they're probably going to need him on that Ryder Cup team.
You say principle. Others will probably say that he's doing so out of pride. And the fines that John Rahm has accumulated since he joined LIV Golf are roughly, he said, about $3 million. And you and I are not in the business of pocket watching. It's easier for us to say, oh, man, just pay it. Just Rory get it over it. With.
That was
but Rory McIlroy did say it. Because when you remember in the lead up to the Bethpage Ryder Cup, and the Americans were going to be getting paid to play, even though they're going to be donating it to charity, the stance from the Europeans were, we would go out and pay to play in the Ryder Cup. Rory's essentially plea to John Rahm is, we have said we would pay to play. Here is your opportunity to do so. Write a check, have this thing behind you, be cleared to play, play the tournaments that you want to play on the European Tour that you have supported throughout your career and that you continue to want to play, and just have this be done with. Instead, it seems to be setting up a pretty high stakes game of chicken where either John Rahm is going to come out looking bad and looking greedy, or the European Ryder Cup team could potentially be compromised by not having one of their three or four best players.
And it seems as if, again, we're all kind of reading the lines from the outside on this. It seems as if the European Tour went out of their way to accommodate these players. These negotiations between LIV Golf and the European Tour have been ongoing for a while, trying to come up with a solution for these fines, which were piling up. John Rahm's not the only one that owed quite a bit of money. And the European Tour gets its flowers out of this as well. They get these top players playing in events that could really use them. I mean, Hatton being in fields, Thomas Dietrich, all of these players now not only are going to play the biggest events on the European Tour, but also the events that probably need the boost. I think the best comparison to that is this week with Brooks Koepka. I said it on the show earlier. The idea that the returning member program was so savvy that you have an event this week. We've talked about not the best field in the world, and officials at this event have leaned into the idea that Brooks has to play here. He's trying to play his way into the signature events, and he is by far the biggest star in this field. His poster and face is up all over PGA National. European Tour is going to do the same thing.
Yeah, it creates a beneficial relationship that's mutual, right? Mm-hmm. Where the players want to benefit by playing in those tournaments because they can still remain eligible for the European Ryder Cup team. But the European Tour benefits as well by having some added star power, whether it's a Tyrrell Hatton or a Thomas Dietrich or a David Puge, one of the up-and-coming stars on LIV Golf. Regardless, it is going to be a very interesting development to watch over the next couple of months. Who blinks first? Is it going to be the DP World Tour, which has already gone out of its way to accommodate some of these players, mm-hmm. or is it going to be John Rahm, potentially some of the negative PR that he has amassed. You mentioned Brooks Koepka in the returning member program. This is his third start on the PGA Tour. What are your expectations for Big Brooksy this week?
I actually have a little bit higher expectations this week, certainly than what the anticipation was when he made his debut at Torrey Pines last month and went on to Scottsdale, where you covered him right there. Clearly, the putter wasn't something he was comfortable with. He probably had quite a bit of rust. We just talked about JT having rust. I think Brooks would admit to much, but this is different. This is a true homecoming for Brooks. He was born and raised here in the Palm Beaches. He went to high school 8 miles down the road from PGA National. He's looking forward to this one, and it's a place he's comfortable playing. This is his eighth start at PGA National. I think the greens suit him better. The golf course suits him better. He went to a mallet putter. Actually, when he got done with his press conferences, he went straight to the practice putting green, and he's still trying out a couple of different versions of the mallet putter, which is an interesting transition for a player that almost exclusively used the blade in his career. He admitted that before he put it in play in Scottsdale, he'd only used it about 300 times. So it's not as though he was completely comfortable. But I do have higher expectations for Brooks this week because I just think the comfort level will be more.
Death of the mallet putter, or excuse me, death of the blade putter.
Oh, no.
One of the biggest storylines on the PGA Tour so far. Almost no one uses them. And Brooks was really quick to blame all of his woes on the greens, either at the Poa at Torrey or the speed at TPC Scottsdale. The fact of the matter is he has not been a good consistent putter in years. Where the difference is that when he was at his best, he could make up for it with really good, solid, crisp iron play, like one of the best in the world. And he has shown signs in that respect. He was really sharp, proximity of the hole at Torrey. He had some nice shots, certainly in the second round in Phoenix. Now it's just about paying it off. Again, he does not need to be elite. He just can't quite be as poor as he has been over the first six rounds of his PGA Tour return. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back on Sunday night for a recap of the Cognizant Classic, the South African Open, where, if you missed it, a Masters invite to the winner, as well as three spots in the Open Championship are at stake. Patrick Reed in the field there as well. And anything else that happens over the next 5 days in golf. I'm getting out of here. Getting out of the snow, back to the warmth and the sunshine in Florida. You can catch Rex all week long on Golf Channel coverage. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.
Stay warm, buddy.